She said, "I'm not afraid of greatness." She said, "I invite to be a part of my community, my church community, the greatness that I see, because I want that in my life and I want to share it with others." And it's so powerful to see the greatness in the people around us and to invite that greatness to be present. And I just am so blessed that we are so blessed with such greatness in the people that come here, that choose to be here, to be members here, that choose to come here to play. There is such love and such intelligence within that love that comes here, and that really is the theme of my talk today, is about the intelligence of the heart and the mind, and how Ernest Holmes' definition of mind was not heartless. And we live in a consciousness of duality, where if something is this, it's not that, either or. And Holmes was definitely a both and kind of guy. And one of the things he said that was so powerful for me in coming to understand this whole sense of heart and mind and thought and feeling was that Holmes said, thought and feeling are states of consciousness within the mind of God. I'm going to say that again. Thought and feeling are states of consciousness within the mind of God. So for Holmes, his definition of mind was really more like consciousness or awareness rather than logical thought or analytical thought that we associate in our science and our terminology with the left side of the brain. There is that aspect of mind, and it's a beautiful aspect of mind. It's not the only aspect of mind. There is also the part of mind we associate with the right brain, creativity and holistic thinking and the capacity to vision and see the big picture. And at the gathering this week, Joseph Chilton Pierce was one of the keynote speakers. And he was talking about the physiology of the body, particularly the brain and the heart. And he described, it was really exquisite, and I was so grateful that a few months ago I had seen a video by Dr. Bruce Lipton who described many of the same things, because it went by really quickly and he described some really amazing things. And since I had sort of seen a lot of the research before, I was able to take in what he was saying at a much deeper level than I would have. What I am saying about what he said may be a little bit differently slanted than exactly what he said, because I also have the Bruce Lipton information available to me. But what he was saying is that, and this is the emphasis that both Bruce Lipton and Joseph Chilton Pierce gave to this information, that the emotional state of the mother determines the development of which part of the brain is developed in the infant, in the fetus. And that a mother who is living in love and security and peace has a chemical environment in her body which develops the forebrain of the infant. A mother living in fear and worry and anxiety or anger, the chemical environment of her body develops the hindbrain, the reptilian brain of the baby. And that the same thing continues through the brain development of the individual when they're a child. And he included up until age 21 at the gathering this past week. He described various parts of brain development between birth and 4 years old, and then there was a huge growth spurt of the brain at age 7, where the brain actually develops and is bigger than the brain of the adult. And then at age 11, there's an event that happens in the brain that's a die-off of all that part of the brain that hasn't been used yet. And then there's another brain development that takes place between ages 15 and 21. And that at all of these periods, the energy that the body puts into the brain development depends on the climate, the emotional climate of the individual who is having the experience in life and when they hit that time of life. And so his point was that it's critically important for society to nurture and support mothers and small children who are in that space to bring them to a deeper place of peace. And one of the extraordinary things that he said, and I have goosebumps just thinking about what he said, is that a pregnant woman who has a deep spiritual connection creates a space of internal peace even in the presence of external conflict. Can you take that in? The pregnant woman with a deep spiritual connection creates an internal peace, that the fetus develops within that internal peace, that chemical state of peace, even in the presence of conflict in the outside world. And the way that happens is through spiritual connection. The ability to remain centered and to know that all is well, even in the presence of chaos on the outside. Such a powerful message for us as a philosophy, to see that bringing people to peace is such a powerful thing. And may I use you as an example yet again, Felissa? Because Felissa often says in coming to Evensong on Wednesday evening that hour of peace in her life has a tremendous healing effect. That it brings her back to center, it reminds her who she is, and allows her to go back into her life with her small children and be a loving, healing presence in her family. And so that was one of the powerful messages I got from the gathering, is that as we deepen the spiritual connection that we have the capacity to share that place of peace with others. And so that was the part that he talked about the brain and the development of the brain. And let me just give you a very brief description of, he said the forebrain was what biology always called the silent part of the brain. It was not in action in biology the way that biologists were studying it. And they really didn't know what it was for. And then in 1987, what they discovered is that the forebrain is the part of the brain that develops in this environment of peace that allows the brain to be governed, that all the other parts of the, it's the governing center of all of the other parts of the brain. And it is able to make decisions about how the other parts of the brain work. And then he went on to talk about the reptilian part of the brain is the part that defends life, that allows survival. And it's the part that knows fight or flight and is the defensive part. So someone living in fear needs that defensive part in order to survive. He said that children who develop from a place of forebrain development, where their rear brain development doesn't develop as much, tend to be weaker physically. They don't have the physical strength and they don't have the sense of aggression that those who have the rear brain well developed, Bruce Lipton went into this a lot more than Joseph Chilton Pierce did, that the rear brain if the energy of the system goes into developing the rear brain, the physical body is stronger, there's more capacity to fight and to defend and to be present in that consciousness, that awareness. And then just Chilton Pierce went on to talk about the heart and the research that's been done on the heart that shows that 60% of the makeup of the physiology of the heart is the same neural components as brain cells. That the heart is part of the mind, that it is a thinking organ. And HeartMath has done a great deal of research. The Institute of HeartMath, which is a foundation in California, has done a great deal of research on the impact of emotion and heartfelt feeling on the physiology of the body. And they talk about how heart intelligence is infinitely expandable, whereas brain intelligence, as measured by IQ, is pretty much set at birth. You are, unless you have an accident and have brain damage or something, your IQ is likely to stay stable throughout your life. But your heart intelligence, if you learn to use your intuition and your connection to source, your heart intelligence is infinitely expandable. And so as we talk about mind here and intelligence, what I'm trying to do is expand our definition of what mind means, to know that we are not talking simply about left-brain thought. Even while we are not, I don't want to disrespect left-brain thought and logic, because left-brain thought and logic is a very important aspect of who we are. But I want to increase our understanding of the expansiveness of what's included in mind and intelligence. It includes our left brain, it includes our right brain, it includes our heart intelligence, it includes our intuition. Ernest Holmes said intuition is the most potent intelligence that we have. HeartMath tends to say intuition is a quality of heart intelligence. How we define it is really important, because what Holmes said is that we need to not eliminate ourself, eliminate our ego, eliminate our mind, our thought. What we need to do is expand our definitions, broaden our horizons, loosen our definition of self to include this idea that the mind that we think with is the same mind that created the universe. We think with the mind of God, individualized in this physical body, in this personality, in this sense of self. So if we define ourself only as our body and as our personality, then we have this limited perspective of the universe. But as we begin to realize that there is self that is eternal and infinite, that is connected to this self that is physical, sometimes they call it local and non-local self. This is Connie Chandler is the local self of God expressing as Connie Chandler, the non-local, infinite, eternal aspect of the truth of my being. So I noticed this week at the gathering a lot of people who are highly intuitive saying, I have to get myself out of the way in order to allow this knowing to come through me. And every time someone said it, I said, you know, I see it differently. I said, I have to expand my conception of myself in order to allow the wholeness of myself to be more fully present. And this is not a binary process. It is not a switch that I turn on that says, this is the wholeness of myself, or this is the local part of myself. It is an infinitely expanding possibility of stepping forward with ahas of the mind and ahs of the heart. Every time we feel uplifted, every time we see something or hear something or feel something that expands our sense of the oneness and the wholeness and the truth of existence, being God expressing, that we see, and I saw this wonderful image. I love it when my mind brings me something that turns my thought around, because what I saw was it's a closed system. It's all God. There is nowhere outside the box that is God that we can go. We live and move and have our being in this system, and there's nowhere we can go. There's nothing we can do that allows us to escape from the godness. We can deny it, we can be not conscious of it, but there is nowhere we have ever been. There is nothing we have ever done. There is nothing we have ever thought that wasn't inside that mind, that essence, that spirit of source. And it was so funny because we talk all the time about thinking outside the box. And that feels good. And suddenly thinking about being inside the box, inside the God box, inside the closed system of the wholeness of spirit, the oneness of spirit, felt really good to me. And it made me laugh because it just turned my way of thinking upside down, which happens so often, and I love it so much. Another example of that, of seeing things from a different perspective, was something that Dr. Margaret Stortz, who is one of the biggest wigs in religious science. She was the president of United Church of Religious Science for many years. She writes a monthly column in Science of Mind magazine, and she also wrote the daily guides for the month of February. And in one of her daily guides, she wrote a sentence, and I picked out a piece of it, and it's actually on here, right above my little Gorton's fisherman atop the whale waving a flag. I love that little piece of art that I have, whatever it means. She said, and this is part of her sentence, and I am quoting her out of context, "We impress our finitude on the infinite each time we think." And she was writing about it as a problem. And I'm celebrating it as the most miraculous opportunity that exists in the course of human events. By our focus, by our attention, the infinite comes into the finite at the level of our thought. We bring this local experience to the infinite each time we think. Does that make sense? Can I see nods or no's? Because I'll talk about it more if it's no's. That capacity of thought to be creative means that by our focus, by our attention, by our intention, we bring the infinite into the finite. And that is so amazing that's true. That is the power of the mind. It is the power of science of mind to teach us to focus our thought in a way that brings into the finite more expansive conceptions of the infinite. That's why we vision for the study group. And I've never said it clearly. I may not have even known it clearly up until this moment. But visioning for the study group is a way to teach visioning to people in the study group. And I realized at this last visioning that the people who came to the visioning are all the people who already know how to do visioning. And so I'm clearly not advertising what's happening there in a way that is expressing it to other people in the study group, because learning visioning is one of the most powerful techniques, along with meditation and spiritual mind treatment. Learning to access that expanded part of the mind of God focused on something, in our case Sterling Study Group, but the process that we use for visioning for Sterling Study Group works for our lives, and it works for our work, and it works for our friendships, and it works for our everything. So from now on, remind me, if I don't say it, that when we're having a visioning, that it's an opportunity for people to come and experience what visioning is, of consciously inviting that broader mind that we have access to speak through us and as us. that's what visioning is, that's what we're doing, and I'm really grateful that I'm getting more articulate about what it's all about. And I'm grateful for all of the great speakers that I heard at the gathering who talked about the value of visioning and reminded me that that really is an important part of what we're doing, not just to create a better study group, but to get more practiced at these things that allow us to impress our finitude on the infinite in a way that brings more joy and love and happiness into the world. Because we have this capacity to create heaven on earth. It is our focus. And so I wrote down this morning that mind includes awareness, perception, and consciousness. And we develop our own consciousness. It isn't done for us. We come into a society wherever we're born on the planet, and we use the brain that we have from the physical environment that developed the brain that we have to interact with the belief system around us. And many of you know I've studied David Hawkins a lot. He did his PhD on human consciousness and created the map of human consciousness that I talk about a lot, and you may have heard me talk about it before. By the way, he's going to be in town next month. He's speaking at Unity of Fairfax at the end of March. And if you're interested in consciousness, he's a really remarkable speaker. So I don't want to miss my point here. What was I saying about power versus force? What he talks about is the importance of expanding consciousness. And that as we bring a different consciousness to the table, our capacity to perceive things in the world changes totally. So how we look at something from a consciousness of shame, for example, he gives a lot of examples, and some of the examples are how people look at God. And he says, people who are in shame look at God as dead. God is not there for them. People who are in depression look at God as despair. People who are in fear look at God as punishing. People who are in anger look at God as an angry God. People who are in acceptance look at God as law and neutrality, that there is an impersonal law that works in the universe. People who are in understanding look at God as the power of the mind from a narrow definition of mind, not from an Ernest Holmes definition of mind, but a pure law definition of mind, and use the mind to work with the law so defined. People who are in love look at God as love. People who look at God as joy look at God as celebration, and the capacity to be present is bliss. And on up the scale of human consciousness until he gets to the level of Christ consciousness, where he says that we look at God as oneness and the wholeness and the universe. And so wherever we are thinking in the moment, whatever emotional climate we have in our body that is supporting the thoughts and feelings of that state of consciousness, we see a God that is the same as our state of consciousness. So as we cultivate this sense of oneness, and science of mind is about oneness, it's about not feeling separate from source, but knowing that we are one with source, and that all that God is centered in who we are at the level of consciousness that we are. And so developing and expanding that consciousness to allow more and more of the mind of God to be present within us and expressed through us is the purpose of science of mind. And our spiritual mind treatment process, our affirmative prayer process, the first two steps are the development of Christ consciousness, regardless of what the prayer is for. The first step is, this is what God is. At the highest level of my understanding, this is what God is. And knowing that my understanding will infinitely expand because there is no limit to what God is. And the second step is, and that is what I am. It's knowing myself to be the same. And day after day in our prayer practice, saying again and again, I am. I am that I am. I am that divine energy present in this planet. So that I live it more, I be it more, I own it more, I see it more, and I stand in that place of seeing everything else from that knowing of oneness more and more. Allowing myself to be in non-judgment. Allowing myself to be in understanding. Allowing myself to grow in my capacity to love. Because that is what God is. And the mind of God encompasses all of it. That consciousness of spirit, that awareness of source. And the difference in science of mind, as Ernest Holmes taught it, and that knowing of law at the level of human understanding, is that we not only know that the law is in action on our thoughts, we know that the love that God is present as us. And so there is this balance in science of mind, as Ernest Holmes taught it, that is both the love and the law. The presence of spirit and the law. He taught using our intuitive guidance, which is heart intelligence, and moving that into the world using our thought, directing our thought, using the law. So this is not a philosophy that teaches duality. It's not a thought that separates heart from mind or thought from feeling or love from law. It's a philosophy that teaches both and. We honor our mind. We appreciate our mind. We cultivate our mind. We work to endlessly expand our mind, take in more space. And we include in that mind the power and intelligence of the heart. And we know that we live with the guidance and the love and the receptivity of spirit. And there's one more thing that I wanted to include in here that I want to absolutely say before I close, is that mind is more like a radio receiver than a storage cabinet. We think of mind, and we think of our memories and all of that. We're just storing up all this stuff, and we're organizing it in different ways as we think about it. But that's not how it works. At an energetic level, there is all the thought that's ever been thought. And we receive it at the level of our consciousness, at the level of the frequency that we're vibrating. And so if we vibrate at a different frequency, we get a different set of thoughts. We get a different set of thoughts when we think about our own life. We get a different set of memories. It's really remarkable how as you uplift your consciousness, your memories of your life change. And you begin to remember the love rather than the fear. You begin to remember the joy and the celebration rather than the abuse. At least that's been my experience. As I raised my consciousness, I began to remember how much I was loved. In the years of therapy, I remembered how much I was abused. And I really like this much better. It really helps me appreciate my past and my parents and my upbringing so much more. Because we're not limited by what happened to us as children. Even if our mothers were afraid, even if the energy that went into developing our reptilian brain kept us limited during all of those periods of growth that Joseph Chilton Pierce described the other day, I believe, and Greg Braden teaches, if you want another scientific kind of teacher who will show this to you, is that in the chemical atmosphere of love and kindness and appreciation and joy, everything within the body, everything within the mind, everything even to the level of DNA continues to grow. And that we do not stop growing. Our internal capacity to be in physiology does not stop, because if we change the chemical composition of our body by changing our emotional state and our thought state, our body shifts. And there's endless amounts of things that I could tell you that I've learned about DNA receptors and the way the brain works and how the chemistry impacts the capacity of the receiver to receive more powerfully. But that, I truly believe that that happens, and I know that I think so much better and differently than I did before I started studying science of mind. Our capacity to expand our consciousness is infinitely expandable. There is no place where infinite and eternal stops. And so as we own and know that there is no way that any of this is hardwired, that is closed within us, we have the capacity to allow that inside feeling to expand our neuroreceptors, our neurocapacitors, our hormonal system. David Hawkins says that as we move from anger and fear to non-judgment, that the climate in our bodies goes from adrenaline to a climate that enhances our neuroreceptors and our neurotransmitters. And that as we move then into love and higher states of consciousness, instead of being adrenaline-based or neutral, our body becomes endorphin-based and bliss becomes our reality. And it supports our ability to expand our consciousness. So I think that the subject of mind is unlimited. And I think that each of us living in and as the mind of God is unlimited. What we do with it is our choice. And I am so excited. I realized that this month that I'm about to begin, having given this talk today, is about will. And will is such a complicated subject, and it has so much negativity associated with it in the same way that in a lot of ways now mind has some negativity associated with it. And I'm really looking forward to this aspect of will that we're going to be talking about next month, because that is the capacity to direct our minds. And so as we allow ourselves to realize more and more that our capacity to focus on being receptive and allowing is an aspect of will. And so I'm thrilled, because I always have so many extraordinary experiences when I set an intention to know more about a subject. And this looks like one of the most expansive subjects I've ever had the opportunity to study now, that I really get what mind means in the context of science of mind. So I am so grateful to each of you for being here and for making it possible for me to do this, because I learn so much because I get to speak to you. So thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Yay, thank you. And so...